All right. Well, welcome everyone to our first Q&A call and coaching call here for March. We're actually going to have two coaching calls this month. This is our last month in the program. And we're going to do two calls because I don't want to leave you hanging there at the end. So I want to be able to address any questions you might have. And for those of you who are still kind of catching up on some of the lessons, I want to give you an opportunity to do that. So that way you'll have some questions for me here in a few more weeks. So this is just another way to support you further. And I just want to remind you that we'll have that other call. So with that, let's go ahead and go straight into Q&A. And just as a reminder, if you have a question and you're on the phone, just hit star 2 on your telephone keypad, and I will raise your hand. I will see you. And I will unmute you, and you can ask away. We can have a conversation. If you're on the webcast portion, then you know what to do. Just type in your question, and I'll read it, and I'll go ahead and address it. So yeah, let's go ahead and get started. I don't see any questions yet. No raised hands. So this is an open floor, ready for whoever's wants to lead. All right, I think this is Chris in Indianapolis. Is this Chris?
Yeah, hi, Ed.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Excellent.
I know you've been asked this and talked about it before, but I'm going to throw it out there again.
Sure.
How do you determine whether or not to send a warm email to two people in the same company and when not to?
Okay, yeah, it's a great question, and I'm glad you brought it up because it can be a little confusing. So the way I make that decision is when I have more than one person who sounds like could be a good contact. So let's say I find five marketing directors or marketing managers and marketing director combinations. Then, in LinkedIn, I'll do my best to kind of get a feel for what their function is and whether they might be a good fit. But let's just say that I can't really tell, and they all kind of sound the same to me. Then I will contact two at a time, and I'll just follow the process for those two. So I will follow up a couple of weeks later and then make a decision as to whether I'm going to send a second follow-up attempt. And then I move on to the next two.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, because some of the large companies that I've been researching, just like you said, I'm finding a lot of people, you know, maybe four, five, six people that look like they could be good contacts. And some of them appear to be in the same physical location, but then others are, you know, these larger companies have completely separate units in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
So I just wasn't sure. I was thinking that if I had a marketing director, say in Boston, and one in San Francisco, and it looks like this company has different focus units on those two locations. So I was thinking I would send a separate email to each of those two.
So let me clarify that. When I say two at a time, I'm still sending separate emails.
Okay.
Yeah, always. So with warm email prospecting, always want to send individual emails, because keep in mind, that's why I call it artisanal prospecting. Because these are handcrafted, like they should really feel like they just went from Chris to Bill, from Chris to Susan. It should never be from one person to two or three.
Okay. Well, I remember on a previous call, or maybe it was on the forum, you talked about how sometimes you can CC a couple of people if they're, especially if they're at the same location. And say, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I wanted to reach out to all three of you, so I'm copying so-and-so on this. You remember talking
about that? Yeah, that was in the last call, and so there was some context there. I was just telling the story of how this all started for me. There was a book years ago that suggested that strategy using mail, physical mail, and that's how I started prospecting with email and letters. It was a very specific process where you CC'd five other people. There were six people total, so you sent it to Bill, and then you CC'd five other people, and everybody knew that everybody else was getting it. And what it created was this kind of internal communication. Okay, well, who's going to get back to this guy, Ed? But yeah, so I was just explaining where this idea kind of was born, but not the approach I use.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's where I was getting confused was, which way to do that.
Yeah, and so then what's the reasoning for doing two at a time? It's just that, you know, let's say that a couple of those people, let's say there's five of them, and you send each an email addressed to each person individually. Let's face it, the emails are going to be almost identical, right? And if three of them happen to be in the same office and they work closely together, then it's going to kind of lose its personalization.
Right.
Because Bill and Susan will talk and they realize when they forward it to each other or they talk about it that it was pretty much the same email. So it's going to feel spammy even if it wasn't. So by doing two at a time, you reduce the risk of that.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Ed.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because it's an important point, important question. Excellent. All right. Let's see. Got Nicole Mattson. Hey, Nicole.
Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm great. So you might remember my panicky call last time of what if they ask about a white paper? I've never written a white paper.
yeah.
But just kind of an update on that situation. It's going great.
Awesome.
So far, I've just written a couple blogs for them, but the white papers are coming, and they still haven't asked if I know how to write a white paper. So I guess they're just assuming that I know, which I'm sure I'll be fine. But the one thing I wanted to pass along was it's actually a B2B software marketing company. And one of the upcoming white papers they're going to have me write about is – it's a little bit out of my depth right now, but they're going to send me some materials to review. But as I was kind of Googling around for more information, I came across this Forrester report that they cite they want to refer to in one of these white papers. And so I could only read the abstract because they're like $500 each. But what it said was the projection is in the next 5 years, 1 million B2B salespeople are going to lose their jobs because B2B sales, marketing departments and those kinds of groups are going to be turning to website content to do their sales instead of salespeople.
Uh-huh.
There's some, dispute over whether or not, that number is, a real number, if it might be inflated. But the point I wanted to just pass along was if anybody out there is still worried that there might not be a market for this, I feel like we're getting in on this at the exact right moment in time because, it's not too late. This is only going to accelerate this need for content.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a great point. It used to be that you needed salespeople in a lot of industries because they were the ones who provided information, right? But when information is a commodity, it's accessible in microseconds, and we've gotten so good. Everyone's gotten so good at getting that information and knowing how to sift through junk and get what they need, then salespeople in many industries become kind of obsolete. What's left is really there's not much in terms of value. So, yeah, and content, people are just more and more turning to content to make those decisions behind closed doors. They don't need someone to come in. Now, there are always going to be exceptions, right? So I think what's going to happen is you have kind of a pyramid. And it's really at the bottom of the pyramid where you're going to see the fallout. There are many industries where they're still essential. But, yeah, that's a great insight. We're in a way, kind of replacing a lot of that. Content marketers are.
Yeah.
Super.
So I just wanted to share that with everybody. Just make you know, don't, you know, if things are not awesome right now, hang with it, because everything's going to be, you know, what we do, the demand is only going to get higher.
Yeah, it's a great point. Hey, and congrats on that client. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Man, that's great news.
Thanks.
You guys are rocking it out. The last couple of weeks have been some great wins there on the site, and I find it super motivating. So I know that others in the group are finding it too. Very encouraging. All right, let's see. Bridget out in the UK. How are you, Bridget?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing well. It's good to hear from you.
That's good. Last time we spoke, I was talking to you about the fact that I was a little bit behind.
Mm-hmm.
You've always said that the course is a lifetime course.
Yes.
Does that mean that when you run another B2B launcher program, are we able to connect and join the new group?
So what you have lifetime access to is all the class materials.
Right.
But not the group. So that is for a couple of reasons. That is a group by group basis. So the next group that I'm starting will be a whole new set of people, but you'll still have access to all the materials.
Okay. Are we able to still email you and contact you in the forum in Facebook?
Yes and no. So you won't be able to contact me directly, but I mean, you can't do that now. I mean, it's not that you can't, like, you know, it's against the law or anything like that. I ask everyone to just contact me through the forum, because emails get lost and it gets out of hand very quickly to do it via email. Here's what's going to happen, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I was going to let you know about this later, but this is a good time to give you a heads up. Is you guys are all going to be moved to the B2B Launcher Alumni Forum. So this is where all the people who have gone through this process are. And, so this is a great place to just continue that conversation. Now, having said that, I do want to be very clear and upfront about something. I'm not there answering questions every day. This is a community that's more for you guys than it is for me. As you can imagine, as that group grows, it just becomes very, very difficult for me to go in there. I mean, it could be a full-time job for me. So I have to draw the line somewhere. I do go in there and provide advice and answer questions every once in a while, but I'm not there every day or every other day like I am in the forum here. So that's maybe the kind of bad news. The good news is you have a network there of professionals who've gone through this process. They're out there. They have clients. They're making things happen. And it's a very, very it's a great group of people who are willing to help.
Thank you.
So you will have access to that. And then what we'll do is we'll move you guys over in April. So – And here's what I would say, and I think everyone kind of understands this, but I do want to emphasize it. With communities like this, I found that you get out of it what you put in. I found that the people who are active and help out and provide feedback tend to get much more out of it. So they're not just giving, they're also getting, and it's interesting how that works. So just FYI, because there are some people who treat it as a, oh, my gosh, I got an urgent fire, I need help. And so they post a question or they ask for feedback, and, you know, some people chime in. But then they don't show up again in the forum for another 6 months when they have another fire, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but the material, you'll have access to that for life, including the Q&A and coaching call replays. That all remains in the student portal.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And then the other option that I'll tell you guys more about later, this is once we're done, will be, I think I mentioned in the last call, the Get Better Clients Academy. So that's something that I've recently started, and I'm doing a monthly coaching call. And it's another opportunity if you wanted to have access to me that way. just like we are right now in these calls, actually use the same technology. You could do that if you wanted to join. But there's also monthly training that I provide. It's very focused, very easy to consume. These are not overwhelming training modules or anything like that. So I'll tell you guys more about that. I want to keep you focused on what you're doing now. So I haven't really talked much about that, but I'll send you guys some information once the program is over. All right, so let me go to, let's see, the webcast, make sure there's no questions submitted there. I don't see anything yet. Again, star 2, if you're on the phone and you have a question, we'll raise your hand. Let's see, it's Kino in San Diego. How are you, Kino?
Hey, pretty fine, Ed. Well, I got a couple of things to update on here, and I just wanted your feedback, of course.
Okay.
I know that, you know, we're encouraged to get things going rather than spend too much time on the, you know, administrative stuff. But, you know, when it comes to building my website, mm-hmm. I've kind of been struggling with that. I think I finally got it ready to go, but, you know, I've been following all the lessons. I'm keeping up on all the discussions on the warm email prospecting and the, you know, inbound marketing and so forth. I'm just kind of behind the curve when it comes to implementing that because, again, you know, if I do any warm prospecting, obviously, they got to have the client or the prospect has to have a good place to go.
Yeah.
And I want them to see a good professional website. As far as the email goes, I finally got through the struggle with Google and got myself a domain-oriented email with the domain I created. You know, I didn't want to just use Gmail because I figure a prospect's going to say, well, how professional is this guy with a Gmail address? You know, my 10-year-old daughter has one of those, you know, type
thing. Yeah.
So anyhow, and the last thing I'm doing is I'm just trying to get myself a dedicated phone number, maybe an 800 number that they can call, because I don't want to use any of my personal numbers for that. So for that reason, I'm kind of right now just finally getting it done. Plus, I've got you know, computer issues. I mean, I have an old laptop with Windows Vista, which has to be the worst operating system Windows ever built.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, but, you know, I've kind of done a workaround on that since I work in a call center and we have Internet access. So what I've been doing is I've been using the downtime between customer service calls to build my website.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So anyway, I've just about got that done. But in any case, what I was wondering is, okay, I've got 5 pages. I am disabling the samples page since I don't have appropriate samples. I did see something interesting in your latest session regarding blogs on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could give me some kind of insight as to how you might implement that, because I understand they could be additional selling points to someone visiting the website.
In terms of adding a blog to your website?
Yes. Because you mentioned that in this session we're on now.
Yeah, and the reason I waited till now is that I want to make sure that everyone is knocking on doors before they even consider launching a blog. So my advice,
really? Okay.
Yeah, based on where you are right now, I would hold off on that. Are there benefits? Absolutely, but I'm all about 80-20, right? What, you know, 20% of efforts can you deploy now that will give you 80% of the results? And The blog is not one of them. The blog is kind of a nice to have where you are right now. So my advice would be, you know, don't worry about it. You know, just go through that material and keep it in mind and maybe set a milestone or a goal. Okay, well, maybe by the end of May, I will, you know, I will get that started, or come June 1st, I will go ahead and start working on getting a blog up. But for now, I would say just knocking on doors. So get the site finished, get it live. That's, as you identified, right, that is the one thing that you need to go ahead and start sending out warm emails.
Sure.
And then start sending out warm emails.
Okay. All right. And then also, I haven't seen the my to-do list, of course, includes looking at that LinkedIn video because, you know, in my position when I don't really have any existing industry contacts, it looks like the warm emails and the joining, you know, LinkedIn groups and so forth are probably the two best methods that I could use to bring in prospects.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. So that's where I would start.
Okay. All right. Okay,
yeah.
Ed.
Yeah, sure.
Now, as far as let me ask you this. Do you advise my trying to get an 800 number to use?
You know what? It used to be maybe a little more important, but it doesn't matter these days. You could just get a regular. It doesn't have to be toll-free.
Okay.
Not at all. You know, because it's businesses, I mean, they don't care, and you know,
most people have unlimited long distance calling anyway. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sure.
So they're used to calling regular numbers.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it, Ed. If I think of anything else before the call is over, I'll raise my hand again. But that's about it for now.
No problem. You got unlimited hand raising capabilities here.
Great. Thanks, Ed.
You're welcome, Kino. Okay, let's see, a question I think came in, yep, through the webcast. Okay, so this question, I can't really tell who submitted it, but it says, weird question, what specific language do you recommend when a potential client wants to meet with you in person, but you prefer to work remotely? In my experience, meeting in person typically requires several hours of time, and it's not cost-effective. Plus, to be honest, it is stressful for me because I'm not all that outgoing. I much prefer phone or email. It's a great question. It doesn't happen often, but sometimes if it's a local prospect, they may offer to meet you in person. Hey, you know, let's meet for coffee and talk about this. Let me tell you about this project that I need help with. And my advice is to try to have a phone conversation first. You know, I would walk people through the wishbone screening technique before I agree to meet with them in person, because that's why that technique is so important and so versatile, because it will save you a lot of time. If they're not a good fit, it's best to find out before you agree to meet somebody for lunch or for coffee than to find out later and you spent all that time. Like you said, you're right. It typically requires several hours of, you know, planning, and you're stuck in traffic, and of course, you know, just getting ready, and you know, nice clothes and makeup, and it's not fun. So if you're going to take the trouble, it should be a highly qualified prospect. So my advice is, when I'm given that offer and it's too early, like I don't know anything about them, I will say, hey, if I don't mind that at all. I think that'd be great. But why don't we first, can we have a quick conversation first, just 15, 20 minutes? I'd like to learn more about what you're looking for, learn more about your business, and just to make sure that we have a potential fit here. I'll say something along those lines. And one or two things happen. They either say yes, or they push for the meeting anyway. Well, why don't we talk about that during the meeting? And so you have to be ready with some sort of reply, and it just needs to be a very basic response of, you know, yes, I would love to meet you, but, you know, before we go there, I would just like to make sure that what I have to offer could help you. I want to make sure that this is, you know, my services, the way I work, would be helpful. Just let them know what the purpose of this, and it's only 15 or 20 minutes. And if they're not getting it, that's fine, because it would tell me that this is probably not a good prospect for you. If it's this hard now, you're going to have problems later. So this is a sign of worse things to come, in my experience. So just try to have that conversation. I will tell you that in most cases when that happens, most prospects will agree to it. And then just walk them through that the wishbone screening process. And it shouldn't take you long. Just limit your questions, and then you'll know, right? Because if it's a business, and also keep in mind, it also depends where you are in your business. As I've said from the very beginning, early on, before you have clients, it's very important that you remain flexible. You know, you're not going to be working with the best clients right out of the gate. Okay, so what you want early in the game, right now where you guys are in this process, for those of you who don't have a client yet, is to get a client as quickly as possible, even if it's pro bono work or even if it's very low paying. So early on, you should be more flexible. But this person is saying, look, I'm not outgoing. I really don't want to do that. That's fine. So then take that into account. But, you know, wherever possible, be flexible early on and be more willing to meet people, even if you're not entirely sure they're that qualified or they would be a decent client. Because some sort of success, even if it's, you know, a pro bono project or, you know, a $200 article, that's much more important right now to your growth and to your momentum than are they a stellar client. And in terms of, so let's just one step beyond, and you didn't ask this, but what do you do when you meet them? You still want to kind of keep that wishbone screening process in mind. I have it memorized, but practice it. Just know, memorize what the different checkpoints are. If you have to put them in a notebook, there's nothing wrong with that. Just bring your notebook and just ask them. Say, well, you know, introduce yourself, have some small talk, and then lead the conversation. Let them know, well, listen, I have some questions for you. I just want to get a better feel for what you're doing, what you're looking for, how I may be able to help, just to see if we have a potential fit here. And go ahead and lead the conversation. Don't wait for them to lead. Yeah, great question. All right, so again, star two if you have a question and want to raise your hand. And while I'm waiting just a little bit more in meetings, I do kind of set some guidelines. Like I won't meet – I live in the metro Atlanta area. If you've been here or if you know anything about Atlanta traffic, it's one of the worst in the country. So I won't schedule meetings outside of 10 and 2, between 10 and 2. They have to be there if at all possible, right? If someone tells me, well, look, it's got to be 8 a.m., I mean, I'll be there. But – given the choice, what I'll do is I'll suggest, you know, 11, 1 o'clock. I try not to do a lunch if I don't know enough about the person. I try to, because that's too big a commitment. But, again, I try to screen them pretty good early on. And I also try to set a limit. I'll let people know, well, listen, I can meet at 11:30. I would have to leave at 12:15 for an appointment, so that way they know going in, and you can tell them when you first get there. I like to tell them beforehand and remind them again that I have 30 minutes or 45 minutes. That way it doesn't drag on, and that way you have an excuse. At 12:15, you can just tell them, well, listen, Cynthia, it was great to meet you. I really have to run. I'll get back with you and suggest the next step. Wow, no questions. I'm surprised. I'm surprised. I've either done a great job of answering questions or I've burned you guys out. All right. Let's see. I can't tell who this is, but it's a cell phone out of Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, hey Ed, it's Steve Brockwell. How you doing?
Hey, how are you, Steve?
I'm good. I had actually disconnected myself for a second there, and so I kind of freaked out back on, and here you are. This is good.
Okay, cool. We just talked bad about you while you were gone, that's all.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Thanks, yeah. So just a little bit of follow-up and a quick question.
Sure.
You had given me advice about working with this medical supply chain software provider, and I've already completed a case that went well, completed a case study for them and build it out. And
oh,
there's more work to come. So that's awesome. Yeah. You had also suggested, I had been on the line with this guy from an insurance software provider and had no clue how that conversation went. And then I mocked up a case study for the guy and didn't hear back from him. Turns out he was traveling. But, you know, you had suggested in the interim, we'll get to him and tell him you'd want to do like a pilot project. And and he really bit on that. He's like, oh, this is great. Yeah, absolutely. And he liked, you know, he liked the initiative of doing the case study. So, you know, it wasn't that much work. I mean, I kind of made it look like it was theirs. And, you know, when you're developing something out of your head, you can take a lot of liberties. So just did that and kicked it out. But that seems to be motivating him, and he's looking to engage me at the end of this month. And then there was an insurance brokerage firm. I sort of went down the same path since that worked, and that conversation's going well. And I've had like 7 hits since the last time that we talked, and at least 4 of those now are in the pipeline like that. So it's really, you know, the advice is going well and very much appreciated.
That's fantastic.
Keep
and by the way, just so so I make sure I understand, when the pilot projects, were these like a real test project or was it a mock-up?
No, this is going to be a real test project. And the funny thing about it is, Ed, I really think, I mean, to me, it's semantics. I mean, I'm getting started with them, but it was a helpful way to kind of get him over a mental roadblock. Like, he wants to try me out. So it kind of told him that I'm thinking, yeah, you're going to try me out. I'm not trying to push you over the edge here. You're just going to try me out. Everything else is the same. I mean, the project's going to be the same. The money's going to be the same. So, you know, that's fine. If semantics work, awesome. So, that's what that is.
Oh, excellent. Okay, just want to make sure that's definitely the way to do it. And you're right. All it is people need an easy first step for anything. We all need that. It's been proven, right? Micro-commitments is another way I hear it talked about a lot. So it's how can you get someone who's kind of a little overwhelmed and not sure, hey, listen, why don't we try a pilot project and pick something real easy, simple, and short? Because once they buy from you, once they engage with you, and have that experience, it's so much easier to get the next project.
So that's really good. Then I had someone who called me back, and it was on the nonprofit end. So, you know, I was trying to go after places that provide solutions for nonprofits. And this is a place that they support large national campaign efforts. They've done major stuff, you know, for any kind of issue, but they're generally healthcare related sorts of outreach issues.
Uh-huh.
So they might work with the American Red Cross or whatever, and they do some background work. And she said, well, gee, we do produce content, but I don't have a budget for external content marketing people. And I didn't think fast enough when I was on the phone at the time, but I thought, you know, it's not out of the ballpark. If I just can't tell where I'm at right now. So what I thought was this might lead to other clients in that arena, though. If she deals with large entities like that, which, you know, having been in the nonprofit world, I know you have to be super careful about dealing with that because the money's not as much there if that's your goal. So trying to get to the larger one. But if I offered to her, well, gee, I would do a smaller sort of pro bono project, you know, it would be good for her, it would be good for me. But then, like I say, I don't know where I'm at right now because I kind of feel like, no, I need to keep working. It's too early to offer that kind of thing. I need to be working this and bringing in the contracts, you know. But I don't know, is that, you know, cutting off something that might be a good piece and an opportunity for later, or I don't know.
So what would you want to get out of it? If you offer to do something pro bono, what do you think is the potential with them?
Right. So I think they're well known in the national nonprofit community, and I would get a piece to put up
Oh, gotcha. So it's just
to say, hey, okay. I did this, and then yeah, and then I could actually go after the targets, you know.
So this falls into that category of at this stage of the game, you need to be more flexible than you will later.
Yeah.
I would be much more open to those kinds of ideas now if I were you.
Okay.
But it also depends on your bandwidth and the progress you're making. I know you're starting to land clients. You're getting a little busier. You know, it's hard for me to give you a yes or no. But
right.
This sounds like something I would explore and consider.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think from the conversation we had, I think it's a controllable thing. I think, you know, it seemed like a reasonable human being and would understand that, hey, you know, if she could get benefit from it, so could I, and that'd be fine. You know, I don't. So, yeah. I mean, it's never too late to go back and say something like that. You know, people are always open to that. If it's not... if it doesn't appear to be in sort of odd reaching kind of thing, you know, I think if I can do it correctly.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's always room to do creative stuff. So I don't want to give you the impression that there won't be later, but now is a time to get creative because you have the bandwidth. And you,
yeah.
So I'll give you an example. I think it was like, now this is already, I was already 2 years into my business, but 2 years full time. But I got approached by somebody from Accenture, the big management consulting company. And this guy was heading a new small division within a division, just kind of a new practice area within tax. And he needed some help with some outreach campaigns. And it ended up not working out, but he didn't have much of a budget. Because he was kind of a rogue guy. He was trying to just – he was thinking out of the box and, you know, how can I make some stuff happen? And didn't want to go through the traditional channels inside of Accenture because it was going to take forever. So anyway, we started talking. But I was very open to it because – so all my clients at the time were companies that nobody – there weren't household names. And I really wanted to have – I had one household name, a big software company, Autodesk. But I wanted to have another one, and I thought, you know, if I had Accenture, how cool would that be? I could say Accenture, Autodesk, and then, you know. So that was an example of something I was willing to be very flexible in and do it for almost nothing just to be able to add them to my roster.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. That's very helpful. Yeah. Also, maybe a sort of a silly question, but it's something I've been thinking about, but, you know, so I'll ask it. But
sure.
It doesn't seem to be making a difference at all right now. But, you know, I'm from a small area. So if you look at my site and you see my address and it's Fairview, Pennsylvania, we're 2 hours north of Pittsburgh on the lake and you know, it's not a sort of known entity as an area. And I thought, I wonder, would it make a difference to anybody, to any clients, if I did something like the sort of virtual address thing where I had an address that was just in a larger metro area? You know, we're probably, our kids are going to be out of the house here, all of them, last one's leaving for the next school year. And so we're going to be moving, and we're sort of city shopping, and you know, I thought, well, why, maybe I get a virtual address for now, especially if I'm going to be in that area anyway. Is that a help or a hurt? It doesn't even matter, or you know, but it's just something.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Prospects, for the most part, they don't pay attention to that. The only time somebody might consider where you live is in terms of time zone. So, for instance, if you live in Indonesia or if you live in Athens, Greece, that's going to be a problem for someone in California, you know, in terms of scheduling times with you but to talk. But other than that, it's really not an issue.
Okay. right.
Yeah. Fortunately, good. Right? We live in a very virtual society. Even people in companies they're used to working
yeah.
with virtual teams.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Very good.
Yeah, so
okay.
I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks.
All right, you're welcome.
Thanks again. Thanks again for everything, and we'll keep plugging.
There you go. Keep riding that wave. You know, you got momentum on your side, so take advantage of that. That's great. All right. So let's see. I have raised hand in L.A.
Hey, Ed, it's Hannah. Can you hear me?
Hey, how are you, Hannah? Yes, I can.
I'm good. Okay, so I guess with my website, I was working on just having, like, samples. One second. So sorry. So, so with samples, I have, I put up a couple new samples from the, some things I was doing in the Secrets of B2B Copywriting, just because I didn't have very many B2B samples.
Okay.
And, like a landing page and then like a B2B web page sample. And so now I have like 8 categories for samples, and I feel like it's getting to be too much. How much is too much as far as samples go?
Yeah, everyone has a different opinion on that. From
yeah.
extremes like Bob Lai, who says, I will post as many samples as I possibly can because that shows the breadth and depth of your experience,
uh-huh.
to I'm kind of on the other side where I say less is more. I find that 3 or 4 samples is fine. I don't think once you get beyond that, it's not that it hurts you. It's just that you get diminishing returns.
Right.
So I don't think I wouldn't do more than what you already have. You don't have to. Clients don't expect you to have and show samples everywhere. I mean, if you can show you want variety, right? So you don't, and you also want diversity.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want 3 case study samples and that's it. Right, because if you offer 8 different things and you only have 3 samples, but they're all in one type of project, then that doesn't show the breadth. So you
mm-hmm.
kind of want to spread it out a little bit. And what I try to do, what I would suggest, is have samples of the projects that you want to do more of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of how I base it.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think I have, I have like 1 sample of a landing page, 1 sample of a B2B web page, like maybe 2 case studies, 2 press releases. And then a couple of these are just like things that I, like my product description, that's just something I wrote on spec just to show I could do it.
Okay.
So I'm kind of wondering if I should, like, weed out some of these things that's like, well, I guess that's maybe not, like, I don't know. Okay. So, yeah. Focus
yeah, product description might be one to look at because that's a tough one. Without the right context, that's one that's difficult to show your experience in and how good you are, because if they don't have the context, they won't know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that might
oh,
be.
Oh, and the
okay.
other thing to consider, too, is this stage in you guys' launch is if they're spec or real. So what I started doing is I started
mm-hmm.
getting clients. I started – the first ones I would replace were a combination of, again, what I don't necessarily want to do more of and what I was trying to replace spec assignments with
mm-hmm.
real client assignments.
As far as that goes, I guess like, I'm really, really interested in sort of my golden egg, or I don't know what the metaphor I'm looking for here, but like what I really want to do is write white papers. And
okay.
So I don't have any samples of white papers. Should I focus on just basically writing a white paper just on spec so I can have it put up? Because or will my other, all my other sort of credits just be like, oh, I can see, I can write, so I can write a white paper. You know what I'm saying?
It's hard to say what will end up getting you that first white paper.
Yeah.
It might be an existing client who hired you for, an article, and then they ask you if you could help them with a white paper. And suddenly you didn't really have to do anything. They just ask you, and you say yes. They didn't ask if you had experience. They just ask you if you could help them, if you did that. So that's how it typically happens, whether it's either existing or a new client. They just come to you. But it's up to you. If you were really just itching to write one, and then it might be worth going on kind of an effort, just really pushing the whole white paper thing, and offering to write one for almost for very little.
Yeah, like that company that I reached out to, and then the guy wrote me back saying, "Oh, the web copy and all that's kind of covered, but I might be in contact, down in this year for like some white papers, some technical white papers for new products." So I was like really excited by that. And apparently he checked out my website enough, or just like the way I wrote the email enough, that he was interested in hiring me for that. So then I was just kind of like, if that's kind of really something I want to do, is that, like I'm going to this expo this weekend and I'm going to be, that's one of the things I really want to like say, is that I do white papers among other things. And, what if someone's that moment of that thing that every writer has? Well, what if they say, let me see a sample of your old white papers, So that's just something I might have to think about, just kind of writing on.
Yeah, I wouldn't obsess too much about it. I think it's more important to have momentum and to keep getting new clients and projects than it is to, okay, that's great, but I really want a white paper project. Don't lose that perspective. Your job right now is to get momentum, and sometimes you can't pick every detail of your wins, right? Just be happy.
Yeah.
Be happy with them, and don't ask questions. Just take it and run,
Totally. No, it's true. Every project feeds into, the next big thing, so.
Yeah.
Should I have separate tabs for B2B and B2C, or does it matter? That's probably one of those tiny little things that doesn't matter.
Tabs, nah. I mean, it depends on how you have your website structured visually, but I don't think so. I haven't seen that before.
Okay. So just have samples and maybe note that this one's B2B and that one's B2C, and just leave them together and they can pick if they want.
Yeah, okay. It just shows, to me it would show that you you can do both.
Okay.
And they're all on that same page. The tabs can be tricky because visually people often miss them. So if it defaults to the B2C tab, they won't even see the B2B stuff, and they won't realize that they have to click on the tab.
Right. Okay. Okay, cool. Last question. I'm attending that expo this weekend, and I wrote a couple short pieces like you suggested just to hand out if people want to, see anything I've written or whatever. And they're just like one or two pages each. One is called Natural Trust in Natural Health Copywriting, and then the other one is Three Mistakes in B2B Natural Health Copywriting. I was wondering if I could post them to the forum maybe and get feedback from everyone. Is that okay?
Sure, of course.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and just let everyone know where you're using them so they understand.
The context or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all I got for you today, Ed. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, you bet. And good luck this weekend.
Thank you so much.
How it goes.
I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited.
Super.
I think it'll be good educationally, too.
Yeah. I think no matter what, I think you'll get something out of it in terms of experience and just insight. So.
Yeah.
Just don't go in there with an expectation that you have to close a client or, get a really hot prospect. Just go in there with an open mind. I try to tell myself, look, at no expectations. I'm just going in there and I'm going to attempt this. And, whatever happens, happens. I'm good. I'm good with whatever outcome I walk away with.
Yeah, that's good. Just putting yourself out there, taking the step, I guess, taking the action.
There you go. Super. Well, good luck.
Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Let me go to the there were a couple questions submitted through the webcast. Let me go ahead and address them. One is from Rich. Rich says, like Kino, I'm putting together website material, getting ready to go live. Not there yet, but have momentum. I'd like feedback on my opening page. What I do and why me. The rest is going well. I might have missed feedback on the last thread. Can I enter it again for the current thread? Thanks for your help. Of course. Absolutely. Just let me see. So what I was typically doing with feedback on website copy, we had a thread for that. And it's you may have to scroll down a little bit, but you'll see it. So look for that and just make sure that so if you posted it, I'm pretty sure that I gave everyone feedback. So take a look at that. But if you don't see it, if you see it and you see that nobody gave you feedback, then I apologize, first of all. Just post it again. That will automatically just send a notification in Facebook, and I'll see it. Take a look at that first. But the best place to post it in is that particular thread because it keeps it all together. So let me take a quick look. Relauncher. Now I'm curious. And maybe I can give you a quicker way to get to. Okay, mine shows up pretty early when I go to it, but I know the algorithm is different for everyone. It's called Website Peer Review Thread, and I think, let me try something here. Okay, yeah, it does find it. So if you don't see it, a quick way to find it is there in the top area of the forum, next to the navigation, where it says discussion, members, events, photos, files. To the right of that is a search field where you can search for keywords within the forum, which, by the way, is a very handy little tool. You know, we talked about, I don't know, lead magnets, or we talked about blogging. Do I need a blog? So just enter that keyword, and you'll find the discussion that we had on that much more easily. So, but yeah, type in peer review there, and it will come up. Okay, so yeah, Rich, just let us know on that. And then Rachel had a question. She said, I feel like the feast or famine of clients is really easy to get into at this phase of launching a business. I want to be super successful, and I'd love to be batting away clients left and right, but at the same time, I don't want to get overwhelmed. I still have a family. I still am working 9 to 5. So how do you deal with a hopeful scenario of putting off too many clients when you're new? What if you end up having to put off the perfect client because you're already booked? How do you phrase that? Since she named an example, I know I just sent you an email asking for your business, but I can't actually get to your stuff for 2 months. Okay, so great question. Here's my experience. My experience has been that most people fear getting overbooked much more than they should. So I think if you get overbooked, first of all, that's a good problem to have. And I guess to phrase it another way, I would take more action than you think you need and risk getting overbooked than fearing getting overbooked and holding back. And the reason I say that is most people underestimate the level of effort required to get booked, to get booked solid. So under that assumption, what happens is that you'll do less, and then you won't be happy with your results. So I'd rather see you do more, even if you're afraid of getting overbooked, because you'll probably end up hitting your target in your sweet spot. You probably won't get overbooked. Now, Rachel, like some of you, has a 9-to-5 job. She has a family, so her constraints are greater. Right? She has less capacity than some of you who are doing this full-time already and have a full week to do this. So you have to take that into account as well, Rachel. That part I can't answer for you. I can only give you a couple of examples, and I'll just share my example with you. So when I was in – many of you know my story. I transitioned out of my day job over a three-year period. I shouldn't say transitioned. I should say that I actually had my side business, my copywriting business, for almost 3 years while I kept my day job. And that last year was very, very difficult because I was generating anywhere between $2,000 and sometimes $5,000 and $6,000 a month on the side while I had my day job. So you can imagine, to generate that kind of income, you have to work long hours. I was working every single day of the week, long hours into the night. I had to pull some all-nighters. It was just, looking back, I don't know how I did it. But here is I set some standards for myself because I wanted to be able to make these decisions more easily when they did happen. And what I decided to do was, look, yes, I have a lot of constraints here. I don't have that much capacity because of my day job, and I'm the sole breadwinner. I cannot afford to lose my day job. My decision was that if I was willing to take clients even if I didn't think I could do it, and then I would figure it out later, than to turn somebody down. Now, that was just me, and again, as I was being very aggressive, I wanted to get out of my day job as quickly as possible, and part of that required that I saw consistency in my part-time freelance income. It also required that I saved a certain amount of money for basically my buffer. I saved a year's worth of living expenses, not of income, but of living expenses. So in order to see that consistency in income, and in order to have a year's worth of living expenses, I was willing to be very aggressive, and I was willing to do whatever it took, and that meant working 7 days. If it meant pulling an all-nighter every 3 or 4 weeks, then so be it. But not everyone's willing to do that. So there's no right or wrong here, but I think you need to decide what you're willing and not willing to do. But going back to my initial suggestion, I would say that it's easier or that it's best to be more aggressive with your marketing than less aggressive, because it's going to take more effort than you realize. And then to your second question, well, what do you say to a client or a prospect who now approached you and now you're book solid and based on your criteria, there's just no way you can take it. You just can't. Then those will happen, but they're not as going to be as common as you might think. And when they do happen, just have a very simple explanation. Say, look, I contacted you, and at the time, I had a slot open. Since then, and even if it was a few days ago, it doesn't matter. People know that all it takes is one client to call you and give you work and for you to be book solid. Most clients understand how freelancing works and that you're a solo practitioner and you can get book solid very easily. So just tell them, when I emailed you last week, I still had some room in my calendar. Since then, I have brought on a new client, kind of came in unexpectedly, and unfortunately, I'm booked for the next 4 weeks. Now, I just want to let you know that up front. I don't know how that impacts your timing, yada, yada. And I think if you do it that way and you do it professionally, my experience has been that you're not going to get someone turned off. They're going to appreciate your honesty. They're actually going to be impressed. And it's going to elevate you because they're going to think, wow, you must be good. You must be really good if you're this busy. So first of all, congratulations. And second of all, you know what? I think I can wait. I hope that helps. I know that's a really long answer, Rachel, but it's a very good one, and I'm glad you asked it. And if you got any follow-up to that, I'm happy to address it. All right, let's see. I got Kino in San Diego. Hey, Kino.
Hey, hello again, Ed. This kind of relates to what you were just telling Hannah up the freeway in L.A. there. As far as a not so much the type of project, but I think you also mentioned a little bit, and you also touched on it with Rich, regarding the website. Mm-hmm. And you know, my my website's with Squarespace. I think it looks fairly fairly nice, but it's bare. It's pretty much bare bones. In other words, you know, all the pages are pretty much text. There's a nice module, you know, template design that they provide. It's kind of, you know, at the top of the page and so forth. But there aren't any like real graphics or insets or anything fancy. It's just all basically basic text and paragraphs. And I know that you reviewed it in the forum. I gave you, you know, different pages that you already reviewed for me. I mean, you saw it in Word, not on the website.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, okay, what I'd like to do is go ahead and submit my website for a review also and maybe see some other samples from people. I was a little confused when you mentioned the thread to use for that. You were saying it was the website peer review thread. And so are you saying that you can post to a thread even though it was closed weeks ago? Or
No, it wasn't closed. So this is an open thread for people
okay.
to post, yeah, their website. Now, I will say that in most cases, people were posting a URL to a website that was live. So
yes,
if
that's what I would
still
do.
In a Word document, then you did the right thing. You just went ahead and posted it to the files section because there's just
correct.
No way to do it inside a thread. Now, you did it a little differently, and it's okay, but what I do ask everyone, if you still want me to review it, I'm happy to do it, but I do ask a favor, which is to put it all in one Word document, just because it's just very hard to do if you send me homepage today, and then next week you send me why me. So, but if you do it, try to have it all in one Word document. It's just easier. But if
okay.
you can't, you know, you're working in phases, that's fine too. It's just a preference.
Well, I was thinking, okay, let's say it's I'm ready to make it go live, and then I just go ahead and just post the URL. Would that work?
Yeah, and put it there in that website peer review thread.
All right. So I'm maybe I was getting confused with the weekly forum threads because Crystal always posted notice that this thread will be closed on such and such a date type thing.
Yeah. No, yes, so that's just for regular questions. But for the hey, I need somebody feedback on this, then it would be the website peer review thread.
Oh, okay, all right. I'll probably just go ahead and post my URL there then.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Okay,
and then,
I definitely would like some honest feedback, and I'll go ahead and take a look at some of the others. You know, maybe I'll get some ideas. I'm just not, you know, there's always a learning curve, and before I try to get fancy with graphics and insets and so forth, you know, I'm pretty much probably going to want to go live with what I have, so at least, you know, the prospect will get a good idea of what I'm doing.
Sure, and by the way, if you want to get ideas from others, if you go through that website peer review thread, you'll see a bunch of them.
Okay.
So take a look at that, because there have already been quite a few posted there.
All right. I'm just wondering if does it depend on the obviously it depends on your mechanism. I know you probably have some people using WordPress, and like I said, I'm using Squarespace, which is pretty much defined. They've got their own set of tools.
There's samples of both. Some people are using WordPress. Some people are using a website builder.
Okay.
So you'll see samples of both.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So it is just simply called the website peer review thread, and that's on the Facebook forum?
Yep, and the way to find it quickly, again, if on the search field there in the forum, you know what I'm talking about, right? Next to the navigation,
is that at the top of the forum?
Yeah, at the top of the forum, you know, you'll see the logo for B2B Business Launcher 2.0. Under
right.
that, towards the right side, you'll see a search field. Just type in peer review, hit enter. And it'll be the first post that it brings up.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, you'll see it right there.
All right. Okay. Appreciate that. If I get lost, I guess I'll just shoot Crystal an email.
Yeah, just let her know. She can point you to it.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot, Ed.
You're welcome, Kino. No problem. Okay, so again, if you got a question, star 2 raises your hand, or if you're on the webcast, you can just type it in and I can read it. Let me check the webcast. All right. No questions there. So while I'm waiting, just maybe another comment to Rachel's question, which is, you know, this is, as you start getting clients, that does become a very common concern. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, what's the right balance? How do I know how much to do? And you have to, again, just to recap, consider all your life factors. That is important. But just know that you will never have the right answer. I mean, I wish I could give you a formula for that, but there is no such thing. The only thing that seems to be a constant is that most people underestimate the effort. So, and you know what? Be ready for it to be messy. It is messy. It is messy at first. You can't control who comes in, who does say yes. These things always seem to come in spurts. You'll get a few people come in all at the same time, and suddenly you've gone from just worried about whether or not you can actually get this business off the ground and you ever get a client to having more work than you know what to do with. And now you got to figure out how to write a white paper because, you know, it's now somebody hired you to do one. You told them no problem, and now you're trying to figure it out. So it's going to take you twice as long because it's your first one. But, you know, again, I think it's a good problem to have. But I should tell you again, it's always messy. You know, you hear these success stories. You guys have heard my success story, but I've also been very transparent about the fact that, you know, I posted some great numbers my first couple years in business, and I talk about that. But what I don't really kind of emphasize, but I do mention, is the fact that these were tough years at the same time. What got me through was the excitement of finally being out on my own and earning a great living doing it. But a lot of it was fear-based. I was fearful that, oh, my gosh, this might end any day. Maybe I just got lucky. Or, you know, will I actually get more clients? Is this a fluke? So it's messy, and it's not always fun and games. But once you kind of get the hang of it, you'll get a really good feel for the level of effort required to continue that momentum. So just be ready for that. It's, you know, at the end, if you're doing this for the right reasons, it's worth it. This is, the sacrifices are worth it. Rich just had a comment. He said, no response needed. Just wanted to share that I'm learning as much from the responses to the weekly thread entries, the coaching calls, and the program sessions. Oh, awesome. Awesome, Rich. Great to hear that. I agree. I'm learning from you guys. You know, it's wonderful just to see the different things you're trying and how you're approaching some of these ideas and kind of your unique twists on some of these strategies. And some of you are trying new things, you know, you're going to events and, you know, this is the time to experiment a little bit. As long as you understand that some of this is experimental, it's not proven, then that's totally fine. But now is the time when you can afford to do more of that, because later you won't have the bandwidth, you know. Hopefully you'll be booked with clients and you'll have to stick to what's been working for you because you don't have a lot of time to experiment. So anyway, I commend you guys for just sticking with it. And if you're someone here on the call, you're feeling bad because, oh my gosh, I'm behind. Everyone seems to, all these other people seem to be doing so well. Listen, this is not a race. So don't worry. I can't emphasize this enough. Just every day is a new day. So if you're behind, just create like a little action plan to get caught up, right? And it starts today. Okay, you know what? After this call, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to listen to this session that where I left off, right? Or I'm going to create my plan. So after this Q&A call, I'm going to create my plan. And starting tomorrow, I'm going to take this first step, which is going through that session the where I left off. And just little by little, baby steps. All right, guys, so I don't see any more raised hands, any more questions. I'll give you a couple of seconds just in case. All right, so we'll go ahead and close it out. Just one last comment. So there's one more training session left. And it's a long session. It's actually part of my Hidden Gold program, and it's an advanced session in that it's really more, it's heavily concentrated on getting more work from existing or dormant clients. So some of it won't apply to you right now, but I still encourage you to at least go through it, even if all you do is go through the handout, because there's some really good material, and if you at least know what's in there, then you can reference it later when you need it most. But it is long, so budget accordingly. And I'll also say that it's not necessarily something you need to go through right now. So if you're pressed for time, don't worry about it. Just save it. Just kind of skim through the handout. So, again, you know what's in there. But don't feel like you have to carve out the time to go through it all. It's two sessions, an hour and a half each. So there's a lot there. But we've pretty much covered the core of the material. This is more advanced stuff that's going to help you beyond where you are right now. And I wanted you to have it because you will use it, and it will help you when you need it most. So just a heads up on that session, which is the last training session. And, again, we'll have another Q&A call, coaching call here. Let me just make sure. I don't want to get this wrong. It's on Thursday, March 24th, so that is in 2 weeks, same time, same bat channel, 3 o'clock Eastern time. We'll, of course, send notices for that and reminders, but just, you know, if you don't have that in your calendar, go ahead and put that in. And if you're behind or if you have been meaning to kind of think through some questions, you got 2 weeks to kind of think through that, get caught up, and let's just have a really good final coaching session then. And, of course, I'll see you guys in the forum, so let's keep the conversation up. You guys have a great rest of the day and a fantastic weekend. Take care, everyone.